Thank you, Shelley. All right, did we pass out the handouts for tonight? We have those, everybody. Okay. We're finishing up with the foolish man. We're looking at Proverbs. We got a little bit, it's a little bit more in the pre-service tonight, so we're a little bit later, but that's okay. I'll as Dave Lucero said, I'll talk fast, you listen fast. We're talking about the foolish man. Of course, you see the verses there. We won't go over them. The key verses in Proverbs, as we've been in this series for about 10 weeks now. The key verse for the foolish man is, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes. And we've been looking at the fool. I believe we've looked at the first 13. We won't refresh through them. We'll the first 14 or 15. I don't know. We're somewhere. Let's look at 16. I was good at math. By the way, yesterday, in honor of the foolish man, was April 1st. Okay? I shouldn't tell you this because you're going to think bad of me, but that's okay. You'll get over it quickly. I called my wife yesterday, and don't get happy because the story's not going to have a happy ending. Called my wife yesterday morning. I said, you're not going to believe it, honey. Somebody just came in and gave the church $500,000 for the building. Now, I thought she caught it. She said, I won't believe it. Tell the check cashes. I've said, we already took it down to the bank. It's in. She goes, really? I'm like, yep. What day is it? I slept on the couch last night. Okay. But if you'd like to fulfill that prophecy, it's all good. Okay. We'll take it. Proverbs number 16. Just look at the foolish man. Why are we looking at the foolish man? Because even though we may not be fools, we occasionally can, if we're not careful, do foolish things in certain areas of our life. And that's why we want to hear what the Bible says about that. Number 16, the foolish man is to be avoided, and his words are to be ignored. Now, we know that a foolish man is someone who ignores and defies God's principles. They have no desire for God. They have no desire to listen to anything that God says, and they just don't care. So that's it's not a person's IQ, and we've went through all of that. Proverbs 14:7 says, go from the presence of a foolish man when thou perceivest not in him the lips of knowledge. If a person is foolish, you will not have to be around them very long before you realize that they are foolish. They may look sharp. They may have a PhD by their name. They may have a title, whatever. But you will be able to tell that they are foolish when you're around them. Maybe the things that they talk about the way that they live, it could be the way they talk about God. And that's what they did. We've already seen earlier in with fools that we're not even to be a companion of fools. We're not even to hang around them, because if we hang around them, it leads to destruction. Listen to the words that someone says. Their words will identify them. And when it does, it helps us to understand that maybe this is somebody we need to ignore. Why? Because we will be judged by hanging around them. By the way, everybody talks a good game. By the way, there are even people that claim to be Christians. And once you get to know them, they start to talk, and you start to see the things, the direction it's going. It's like, this person is either a backslidden Christian or they're lying about who they are. And you might have to be careful about being around them. Look at Proverbs 15:7 on your sheet. The lips of the wise disperse knowledge, but the heart of the foolish doeth not so. See, because a person is a fool, they despise wisdom. And so when it comes to conversation, important things of life, they really have nothing to say. By the way, who we really are comes out eventually. Eventually. It's going to be seen. In the case of fools, what comes out of their mouth? Foolishness. Just stuff that's utter nonsense. Stuff that's not helpful. Most of the time, stuff that can be destructive. Look at Proverbs 15:2. It says, the tongue of the wise useth knowledge right, but the mouth of fools poureth out foolishness. It's almost like they just can't help control themselves. I mean, it's just like poureth out. It's just like, you know, you turn on a faucet and just out it comes. Why? Because they don't have any wisdom. They don't understand. And so it's just naturally going to flow out from their life. It's like a person that wants to control the conversation. Not by the quality of their words, but by the quantity of their words. You ever been with someone like that? You want to talk, or you know, a lot of times it's when you're in the world or maybe at work, and someone just start, they'll dominate, and everything they say is just like, it's nonsense. It's not helpful. It's not useful at all. It's like a faucet. It's hard to turn them off. Proverbs 12:23 says, a prudent man concealeth knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaimeth foolishness. They have to always be saying it. Proclaimeth is really the force with which they say what they're saying. They're a person that they're always absolutely right, and they're going to let you know it. It never even could enter into their mind that they might be wrong, and I think we looked at that earlier. Look, as we go through Proverbs, I hope you understand one thing. Who you allow to influence you is very important. Very important. If I was at work and I was in a break room and someone was doing something, I'd kindly get up, and I wouldn't, you know, get up and stomp out. Well, I'd find a reason to leave. I just don't want to hear it. And I worked in places, and you sit there and it's like, I just don't want to hear, you know, it's just ridiculous the things that come out. Be very, very careful. We do become like those whom we allow ourselves to be influenced by. If we're learning foolishness, then we'll become foolish ourselves. There are many people in this world, they have academic degrees, they have high standing. But if they reject God's word, ultimately God considers them a fool. And so I don't care where they're at. I don't care what title they have. What they're saying is nonsense. You know, if you go to a secular college, and I'm not necessarily all for that, but it's between you and God or whatever, but be very careful. If you're in a classroom and they're teaching you 1 + 1 = 2, that's okay. Right? But if they step over to trying to teach you how to live life, tune that out quickly. That's where they cross the line. Nobody who's godless is going to teach me how to live. Back when I had the singles many years ago, and I taught the singles class, and we had several that go to secular colleges, and that was fine. And some of the stuff they would tell me is just ridiculous. The stuff the teachers got away with in the name of, one of the girls came and said, they were in a class, and their teacher had taken a trip to Thailand. The teacher came back, and in class, we're talking about a college, Cal State Long Beach. In class, he was passing around pictures of ladies he was with who weren't dressed. I'm like, how in the world did he get away with that? Because they had this jewelry on, so it was considered art. That's, I don't want to say stupid. That's garbage. The stuff that passes for art. So if you paint a picture and you call it art, and there's another thing they had at the college over there, they had an art show and they had some graphic nonsense stuff I wouldn't even mention in a mixed crowd, but it was okay because it was art. But we allow people to influence us. I don't care if they have a degree by their name. By the way, our education system is ignoring the truth of history and changing it to fit their desired lifestyles. I mean, they're looking back now, and everybody was gay hundreds of years ago. How do you know that? We try to change history to fit our ideals. We try to change history to fit our lifestyles. That's called foolishness. There's a man named Sigmund Freud who hated God. He called himself a godless Jew. He said that religion was a neurosis, a mark of infancy that people should disregard to prove that they had grown up. By the way, our colleges follow him in psychology. Now, was he a smart man? Probably. Did he have a high IQ? I'm sure he did. But in God's eyes, he was a fool. And I don't mean that to be mean, you know, like, oh, you fool. No, I'm going to talk about that. I'm talking about one who ignored and defied God and his principles. We must be careful about that. Dr. Bob Jones Sr. said, education without God makes men clever devils. I like one guy, he calls our college system, he goes, it's not institutions of higher learning, it's institutions of lower living. We need to be careful. Why? Because God's been booted out. So we need to be very, very careful who we allow to influence and teach us. Very important. Number 17, and we already mentioned this, the foolish man denies God in actions and beliefs. Proverbs 17:16 says, wherefore is there a price in the hand of a fool to get wisdom, seeing he hath no heart to it? He doesn't care anything about it. He doesn't have a heart for it. He doesn't want it at all. He ignores it. It's not anything. He has no desire for wisdom because he has no desire for God. God's an inconvenience. All you see is this life. That's all that matters to him is this life and everything we can get out of it. By the way, if you want to have the best life that you can have on this earth, then you ought to get in that book. That doesn't keep you from life. That pushes you towards life. But we've bought the lie. The foolish man is giving up something that is valuable for that which is worth very little. It's a bad trade-off. I don't want to have anything to do with God. I don't need his wisdom. I can live my life. I can do my own thing. I know what's best for me. And really what he's doing is he's being sucked in to take something that's of no value and getting rid of something that is of high value. I read a story about a lady. Her name was Anna Marie Robertson. She lived to be 101 years old. She had always liked art and had kind of dabbled in it for very many years. But she didn't start painting until she got into her 70s after her husband died. She started just painting in earnest. And she started painting all these paintings. And they were just kind of like, I think, like folk-type art, just like, you know, just homesy type of stuff and farm and that kind of thing. And she didn't think anything was valuable about her paintings, so she would sell them for, you know, anywhere between $3 to $5 just to her friends and people in the community. An art collector was at a used store one day, and he found a couple of them and paid $5 for them. He got enamored with them, and come to find out, this lady's art became pretty popular. They called her Grandma Moses because she was so old. Some of her paintings are worth over $1 million today. Some of the people that bought those paintings for $5 to $10 started cashing in. Okay? She thought her thing, these are of no value, but they were of high value. That's what we do, and that's what a fool does. They trade that which is truly valuable, a life with God, a life of wisdom, for something that is truly not very valuable. We have a hard time judging what is truly important in life. We have a hard time judging what is truly valuable. But God has given us a way to figure out what is valuable in life. It's recorded in the pages of his book. That takes wisdom. The fool misses out on all the great things of life by choosing his own path and doing his own thing. The extreme case of a foolish man, look at Psalms chapter 53. I think the verse is down there. The extreme case of a fool in denial of wisdom is atheism. You know what atheism is? I think of atheism as a militant fool. And by the way, they are very militant. And by the way, don't be fooled. Our society is not for tolerance. They are tolerant of everything but Christians. Okay? I don't like following the news anymore. It turns my stomach. And they're not. If you're a Christian, you have any type of belief, why aren't you inclusive? I'm never going to be inclusive of something that's wrong. Okay? Not going to be mean-spirited to an individual. If a person wants to be an atheist, that's their choice. I was walking the other day around here, and I met a lady, and I gave her, and I tried to give her an invitation to church. She wouldn't take it. Lives Brother Manor. She goes, I'm an atheist. And so I stop and talk to her for a while, and she's like, you know, she's probably close to 90, I think. And she was talking about how she's lost several children, and she outlived her children, and it was disease, and she was blaming God for it. And I tried to have a little conversation with her. But something happened, and she kind of, I'll just put God on the back shelf. You don't ignore God. He's still there. But what is Proverbs 58:53:1? The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Corrupt are they and have done abominable iniquity. There is none that doeth good. Psalm 14:1, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. So God describes atheists. Okay? And by the way, atheists don't believe in God. God doesn't believe in atheists. It is a choice. No one is born an atheist. That's why children come to faith very easily. It's easy to understand that there's a God. The stuff we espouse and we throw out there that seems to make sense as adult, a child can see right through that. Many years ago, I was driving with Jessica. She was about 7 or 8 or something, and we were in the car, and she goes, what's evolution? So I tried to explain it to her. I said, you know your uncle? He was a monkey. But I said, it's the belief that one, we used to be monkeys, and over a course of time, we became humans. I tried to explain it to her, and she started laughing. She goes, oh, quit joking, Dad. What does it really mean? And I tried to explain it to her, and she thought I was kidding because to her, that was ridiculous. I guess it's ridiculous until you get into college. Then it starts to make great sense. Can I say something? It takes a heap more faith to believe that there is no God than there is to believe that there is a God. It takes a great leap of faith to believe in evolution. It does. There is no evidence. There's zero evidence. There's more evidence for God than there is. It also makes for a life of emptiness. There's this new atheist. His name is Alec Rosenberg. He's a professor of philosophy at Duke University. That's why I hope they lose. In his book, The Atheist's Guide to Reality, enjoying life without illusions. He says this, is there a God? No. What is the nature of reality? What physics say it is. What is the purpose of the universe? There is none. What is the meaning of life? There is none. Why am I here? Just dumb luck. Is there a soul? Are you kidding? Is there free will? Not a chance. What's the difference between right and wrong and good and bad? Now listen, here's why people become atheists. There is no moral difference between them. He concludes, so much for the meaning of history and everything else we care about. And then he says, if you're going to be atheistic, you will have to be comfortable with a certain amount of nihilism, a belief in truth or authority. And just in case, there's always Prozac. That's encouraging. Now, if I read that book, I'd be ready to go. You know what he's basically saying? There's no meaning to life. Life is meaningless. Do whatever you want. There are no rules. Now, you think with me for a minute. Where did that come from? Satan. You will be God. You decide what's right and wrong. God has no right to tell you what to do. Now, we just packaged it better. We call it atheism, and we give it a degree, and we teach it in our school system, and we wonder why the kids act like animals. Because we've taught them that's all they are. That's foolishness. Number 18. The foolish man should not be argued with. It's a waste of time. Proverbs 29:9. If a wise man contendeth with a foolish man, whether he rage or laughed, there is no rest. You know, sometimes the best battle you fight is the one you don't fight. You're going to sit here and fight with it. If you contend with them, whether you rage, in other words, you're into it, yelling at them, you're going at it, or you laugh, you're sarcastic, or you try to be a little lighthearted about arguing with them. There's no rest. It isn't going to happen. You're never going to win that case. Have you ever tried to make sense to somebody about a situation? And you explain it. Makes sense. You could tell them what God says. And they don't get it. Anybody ever experienced that? Sometimes we call it counseling. people come in and over the years, and like, I want to help with this situation. It's like, okay, tell me the situation. We had a girl come in years ago. She used to be in our youth group, and parents didn't come to church, and she had been gone for a while. She came into town. She goes, I have a problem. I said, okay, what's the problem? She goes, I have a 2-year-old. I have a 1-year-old, and my boyfriend cheated with another girl at the exact same time, and she has a 1-year-old. And he's with her. And I go, so what's, she goes, the problem is I want him back. I'm like, you do have problems. And no matter how much you try to talk to her, it's just nothing. It's like the elevator was there. The lights are on, but no one's home. The wheel's turning, but the hamster's dead. Okay, that type of thing. It's like, that's what happens when you argue with the fool. You can say, no, that's not the, but it's just like, it's like earth calling. Hello, anybody there? No, they're foolish. They're not going to listen. So it's a waste of time. I'm not saying we be mean to people. Oh, you're a fool. I'm not talking to you. But sometimes it's just like, it's a waste of time. Until they come to the point where they're willing to do what God says, sometimes we're just spinning our wheels. Sometimes God puts them in something. He's trying to teach them something. No matter what tactic you take, so what do? You don't logic with them. By the way, some people just like to debate. That's fools like to debate. And they're not going to listen. So we do that sometimes. We're soul winning. You knock on a door and someone wants to argue with you about something, and what happens? You know they're not going to change their mind. So what do? You spend your whole soul winning time debating with that person, and then you come back and 4 doors down, probably with somebody that needed the gospel and would have listened. But you debated with this person that had no desire for God. And by the way, there are people out there that want God. Let's go find them. We spend all of our time sometimes with people like, and I know, I'm like you, I don't like to give up on people too quickly sometimes when they have problems, but if they have no desire for God, sometimes we're wasting time with them when there's someone over here that says, hey, I need some help. I'll listen. Teach me the Bible. But that's what we do. Someone has said debating with someone, it's a saying they have in construction. Arguing with a building inspector is like wrestling with a pig in the mud. After a while, you realize the pig enjoys the mud. Okay, by the way, don't argue with our building inspectors. Be nice to them. We need them to say yes. Now, let me say this. When should we go verbally after a foolish person or someone acting foolishly if we know they shouldn't listen, if they won't listen? Now, I'm the type of person, I don't want to waste my time. If someone doesn't want to listen to what we have to say, I don't want to waste my time. That's, but I felt better because I told them what I felt. I could care less if they know how I feel. If they don't want help, let's go find someone that does want help. Amen. Or let's go eat tacos. Let's do something. Let's not waste our time. But when should you take that chance and say something to a foolish person? Let's look at some verses here. First, let's see the warning. Proverbs 9:8 says, reprove a scorner, lest he hate thee. I'm sorry, reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love thee. So a scorner is close to a fool, right? If you reprove them, they're not going to like you. It's just going to cause them, it's going to cause them to hate you. The opposite is when you help a wise person, they love you. Proverbs 15:12, a scorner loveth not one that reproveth him. Same thing. Neither will he go unto the wise. Proverbs 23:9, speak not in the ears of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of thy words. Not only will a fool not hear you, he's going to hate what you have to say. Okay? Now, let's jive this up with these other verses here. Proverbs 19:25, smite a scorner, and the simple will beware, and reprove one that hath understanding, and he will understand knowledge. So there is a time to smite a scorner. Not physically slap them upside the head, although sometimes people are tempted. Proverbs 21:11, when the scorner is punished, the simple is made wise. And when the wise is instructed, he receives knowledge. Proverbs 22:10, cast out the scorner, and contention shall go out. Yea, strife and reproach shall cease. The only time you go after a fool or a scorner is for the benefit of those around. They're not going to listen, but they're corrupting somebody else. Someone needs to get up and say something. Say, no, that's not right. You know, sometimes if you're at work and you're in a little group and somebody says something and says you think that's okay, right? And you don't want to say anything. You might need to say something for the benefit of those who are around that aren't fools. Smite the scorner. Why? So not for the scorner because he's going to hate you. The Bible already told us that. But you got to smite them for the simple person. They don't know any better, and they think that this guy's garbage is right, and sometimes you need to stand up and say, that's not right. Not for his sake. He ain't listening. But for this person's sake. I remember years ago, we first started the church, and I was a youth director, and we had all these teenagers, and you know, it was the early days. It was all these Cambodian kids. They had zero Christian background, but we were able to get a group together, man. We had 6 months, 7 months in the church. We had a good group of teenagers coming, trying to get them saved, trying to get them on board, you know, and some of them were catching it, and the others of them, they wouldn't catch it if you handed it to them. And so all this nonsense was going on in the youth group, you know, letters, and they were deceit with their parents and garbage. So I went to pastor one day. I said, you know, it's starting to frustrate me. I got to deal with these kids. What should I do? He said, so I'll tell you what you do. He goes, this Sunday, you're going to have combined Sunday school with all the teenagers. He goes, I want you to go in there, and I want you to throw a fit. I want you to call them out. I want you to show them the evidence you have, what they're doing wrong. He goes, I want you to kick some chairs over. I want you to flip a table. He goes, they need to know that this isn't tolerated in church. I thought, that sounds fun. So I set up two tables. Set a table here. At a table here, I had some chairs over here, and I had them all sit out here. And I just, you know, and you shouldn't do this, it's probably wrong, but I got a verse, you know, God wants order in the church. And I said, we're going to have order in the youth group. I said, so-and-so, right here, Sophia, I'll just say Sophia, because half the Cambodian's name was Sophia. Sophia, talk to your mom last week. You told her you were coming to church, and you were at the mall with three guys. I said, we're not having that. I said, by the way, I already told your mom. Another one did something stupid. Hey, I got a love letter right here. Some ridiculous, goofy love letter. Like, I'm going to kill myself if you don't love me. And I'm like, I read that letter. And then after I do that, I kick a table. Like, bam, table went flying. They're like, whoa. I'm like, this is fun. I had all kinds of examples. I had been saving those things for the day. After we got done, you know, okay, we're going to pray. I'll tell you what the interesting thing was. You know who the kids that came up and apologized for? It was the kids I didn't even call out, the good kids. I had one of the best kids in the youth group said, I'm sorry, Brother Myersman, I've not been taking this thing seriously. I'm thinking, what are you doing? I mean, I wasn't even talking about it. I was talking about that one right there. See, those other kids that were doing that, you know what I had to realize? They were scorners. They were just there because it was the thing to do. But the other ones saw that you don't act like that, and it helped them. And it changed the youth group a little bit. That's what the Bible's talking about. We don't argue with fools. It's a waste of time. But on the other hand, in our scope of influence, we cannot allow them to set the tone. By the way, we don't allow people, you know, to set the tone. The godly, you know, in our Christian school, you know who ought to set the tone? Is the kids that are that love God. If there's someone in our school, you don't love God, you know what? You say, well, you guys kind of, you get on us for, yeah, we're going to get on you. You know why? Because it's not right. Now, if you're having a bad day, you're having a bad day. But if you're trying to be a fool, we're not going to allow that. That spreads to everybody else. And we have great kids. Now, I'm not thinking of anybody. But that's the principle. Let's pray. We're done.